Okay, for this evening, I wanted to give some instructions on walking meditation. Some of you during your interviews have asked me about walking meditation and how we can combine that with the sitting meditation which I teach here. So today I'm going to be talking a little bit about walking meditation. Especially when you're on a retreat such as this, or you're back in your hermitages, sometimes that you can only sit meditation for so many hours before your body feels very stiff and your knees begin to ache. And it's always good to look after your body so that throughout your monastic life you'll be able to meditate with pretty much a lot of ease. And I have been very fortunate in my monastic life that because I've looked after my body, I can sit without any problem with my knees or my back. But I've also been able to balance my meditation sitting on the cushion with also walking meditation. So that way that when the body becomes stiff, I can exercise the body by doing walking meditation in such a way that it doesn't disturb the progress of samadhi or stillness which is gained in sitting, but which actually supports and enhances it. So walking meditation is recommended, especially for people who have a lot of time to practice meditation for many, many, many hours of the day. And also, walking meditation is a great method to overcome sloth and torpor. I've never seen anyone fall asleep when they're doing walking meditation. Sitting meditation, yes, but walking meditation, you're always awake. Another little method of overcoming sloth and torpor comes to mind, because I was told when I first became a monk in the northeast Thailand, just across the water in the Mekong, on the other side of the Mekong in Laos, there was a very, very famous meditation monastery. And it was very strict, and the teacher there would take his new students, new monks, on a walk through the jungle all day to tire them out. And when they were tired and sweaty after a long walk through the jungle, on the way back to the monastery, they would pass a clearing. And in the clearing were very, very tall trees. And high branches on those tall trees, the teacher had asked his daikas to build little platforms just about the size of your sitting mats. And there were bamboo ladders to go up to those platforms. And after tiring the disciples all day, he would tell those monks to climb up the ladder and each go to one of those platforms. There were no railings on the outside. They're just a flat piece of wood, high up above the ground. And then the teacher would take the ladder away and say, "I'll be back in the morning." And there you had to sit maybe 100 feet above the ground with no protection at all. And any sloth and torpor would mean your death. They say many monks got great meditation there. At least those were the ones who survived. Please don't try that. But you know, if you really have to, you can. So never think the sloth and torpor is just a big problem. If you really want to overcome it, there's great ways. That is an extreme way, not recommended. But it just shows you what's possible. But anyway, a much better way is doing some walking meditation. So basically, walking meditation is similar to the sitting meditation. It's very similar to the Anapanasati, except we don't use the breath as our object. So when I start walking meditation, I choose a very simple path. Not going round in circles, but going backwards, going forward and then turning around and coming back again. In the tradition of where I grew up in northeast Thailand, they say somewhere between 25 and 30 paces long. As you get older, you don't need to go so far. 20 paces may be enough for you, or 15 if you get to over 60 or 70. It seems to me you don't need such a long distance the older you get, but you find a suitable path. In this resort, because of the rain, there's not many opportunities to do walking meditation because there's very little which is covered. But for those of you who have umbrellas, you can always do walking meditation outside with the umbrella, walking backwards and forwards with the umbrella protecting you from the rain. So just because it's raining does not mean you cannot practice walking meditation out in the open. The umbrellas are there, and if you're not mindful, the umbrella will slip and you will get wet. So it actually enhances your mindfulness when it is raining. But you choose a simple path, and if there are no markers on either end of the path, you can use your two sandals, one on one end and one on the other end, to mark your path. And obviously you want a path which is reasonably smooth and free of obstacles. So you don't have to worry about stepping over, say, a tree root, or having to avoid, like a bush. Make it simple and safe, so you don't have to think very much. And once you've chosen that path, you start at the beginning. One of the nice things about walking meditation, as I mentioned before, is all you do is you go from one end to the other, and then you come back again. In other words, you get nowhere. Remember, the whole point of this meditation is not getting somewhere, but stopping that very idea of always wanting to get some attainment, to get somewhere, to get someplace. So wherever you go, you come back to where you began, just like samsara. There's an old story. It's actually a joke we tell in the West. I think it'll be easy enough for you to translate into Sinhala later on, about the two old men sitting on a bench together. And one says to the other, "I am now 70 years of age, and I feel terrible. Every bone aches, and it's very hard to walk, to hear. Everything is so difficult." And his friend said, "I'm older than you, I'm 75, and I feel like a newborn baby." "How can that be?" said his friend. "Well, look," he said, "just like a newborn baby, I've got no teeth, I've got no hair, and I've just wet my trousers." So, look at old people. You start life wearing nappies, and at your old age, when you become incontinent, you have to wear nappies again. Life is like that. You start off, and where you end, back where you began. So walking meditation is like that. You walk there and you walk back again. You're not getting anywhere. Your idea is being here, not going someplace. So the first thing which you have to achieve, if you call it achievement, the first stage of letting go and walking meditation, is precisely the same stage as in Anapanasati, present moment awareness. You make that your priority, just being here in this moment, abandoning all thoughts of the future, abandoning all memories of the past. So you are just in this moment. Sometimes people plan the future, thinking that that way they'll be very secure. And here in Sri Lanka, many people go to places like Kataragama to find out their future. I hope none of you have been to those places to go and see fortune tellers. It's a waste of time. And anyway, who have got the best powers, those fortune tellers in Kataragama or your own Buddhist monks? Buddhist monks are not supposed to tell fortunes. However, once, only once, Ajahn Chah did tell somebody's fortune. A man, a disciple, came to see him one day and said, I know you can do this, you're a great master, a great meditator, Ajahn Chah. I want you to read my palm and tell me my future. That's one way of predicting the future, to see the lines on your palm, and that will predict what your future is going to be. And Ajahn Chah, like a good monk, said, "Monks, good bhikkhus, do not do such things. We teach the Dhamma, we give you precepts, but we don't read palms. We don't tell your future." And then that man said, "In your previous sermon, the bana you gave on the last Poya day, you gave a sermon on gratitude. Now," said this man, "I've been giving you so much dana. I've been feeding you and giving donations to your temple so you can build a nice monastery. And this is the first time I ask for anything. Show some gratitude. Tell me my future." So it was a very strong argument, which Ajahn Chah could not refuse. So he said, "Okay, give me your palm, and I will tell you your future." And this was the one and only time Ajahn Chah did this. And so the man gave him the palm of his hand. And Ajahn Chah, with his finger, started to trace the lines on this man's hand. He did it very slowly, with full concentration, as you have to do if you're really going to tell a person's future. And every now and again, Ajahn Chah would stop and say something like, "That's not good." Sometimes he would say, "That's interesting." Which made this man more and more excited. And it seemed it took a long time for Ajahn Chah to finish. And the man could not wait to find out what his future would be. Because Ajahn Chah, he was an Aryan. Aryans don't lie. Whatever he said would have to be true. So the man waited, and Ajahn Chah finally finished. He said, well, what's my future going to be? What's it going to be?" And very slowly Ajahn Chah said, "I am a good monk, and I will not lie. What I tell you is what's going to be true." "Yes, yes, yes, I know. What's going to happen?" He said, "Sir, yes. Your future." "Yes, yes." "Your future is uncertain." And that's all Ajahn Chah would say. So Ajahn Chah did express his gratitude by teaching the Dhamma. The greatest fortune teller will tell you your future is uncertain. Now you know your future. So it's a waste of time thinking about it. It is uncertain. Once you know that, you don't forget about the future. It's a waste of time. So on your walking meditation path, the first thing you do is to focus in this present moment. And all the ideas of what you're going to do later on today, or tomorrow, or after this retreat finishes, or later on where you're going to spend what next year, that is a waste of time. If you think like that, you're not a meditator. You're not a bhikkhu. Stay in the present moment when you're on your meditation path. And what happened earlier? Who said what? Let that go too. You want to free your mind of these burdens. So you make that your priority at the beginning of doing walking meditation. Just being in the moment. It does not matter what you're aware of, as long as it's happening right now. The step which is happening now, the feeling which is occurring now, the sound of the birds or the wind or the rain which is happening now, is all you're concerned about. You're freeing your mind of so many unnecessary burdens. And when you've managed to establish presence of mind, just being in this moment while you're doing walking meditation, then go on to the next stage, which is again the same as in Anapanasati, which I've been teaching, silent awareness of this present moment. There's no need to have a running commentary. If you lay people look at the cricket on TV, you can see who's bowling, you can see who's batting, you can see for yourself them hitting the ball for six or four. Do you really need this person giving a commentary all the time? It's very interesting if Sri Lanka are playing Australia at cricket. If you listen to the Sri Lankan TV set, when the ball hits Ricky Ponting's pads, if it's a Sri Lankan set, it's LBW, certainly. If you listen to the Australian TV broadcast, no, it's not LBW. You will always find that the commentary is biased. It is not true. So these words which you say to yourself inside your head, do not believe them. All thinking misses the point. It doesn't get to the Dharma, to the truth. It's one step away from Dhamma. It's called Dhamma Vitakka. It's not Dhamma. So be quiet. That next stage, when you're doing walking meditation, is to stop this thinking, chattering mind until you can walk, experiencing the moment without any commentary. You don't need to give things a name. Just know them. A good example, you could hold something up and I can say, what is this? What is this I'm holding up? When you give it a name, say a cushion, that's not what this is. It's much more than that. Sometimes when you give things a name, you're only perceiving a fraction of what's really there. It's much more than a cushion. When you give something a name, you are missing many other qualities. You're only seeing a part, not the whole. Be still. Be silent. And then you can know the truth. So the next training when you're doing walking meditation is to see if you can stop the inner commentary and just feel, be, hear, exist, rather than having a commentary about it. That's much easier to do when you're walking than when you're sitting meditation. The reason is because there's something going on to occupy the mind, walking. When you're sitting down, there's hardly anything occupying your mind unless you focus on your breathing, and you know how to do that. Which means when you've got nothing to do, you just think. When you're walking, it's easier to calm that thinking mind and be still. And once you have calmed the thinking mind, so you're not giving yourself an exhortation on the Dhamma, you are just totally quiet inside, then you can start to focus on the meditation object of the feelings in the legs as you walk. And at first your mindfulness not being too strong cannot pick up many sensations. All you need to know is left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. In the same way that you know when you're doing Anapanasati, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, just that much. So you know every step without missing one. As you settle down in present moment and silence, just like the next stage in Anapanasati, where you see the full awareness of one breath, from the very beginning of an in-breath to the end of an in-breath, from the very beginning of an out-breath to all the sensations till the end of the out-breath. That is what you do in walking meditation. You see the first part of your foot which lifts up from the ground. You feel that leg move and how it moves. In my walking meditation, my foot goes up and then backwards slightly. And then it goes in a little arc and it's higher at the very end and then it goes down. And the first part of my foot which reaches the ground is a little ball of my feet, which is just under my little toe. That's how I walk. and the last part which meets the ground is the heel. You find out how you walk, which part moves off from the ground first, and which part touches the ground first when one step is completed, and just how your leg moves when you're walking. What is its trajectory, and how does it feel? And when one step is finished, you notice your body sway as the weight is transferred from the leg which was stable and still to the leg which has just completed its step to release the other leg so it can now move. You start to notice all the many sensations involved in just one step. It is like being a dancer who has to be mindful of every movement in their feet and also in their body as they're learning a dance. You're being aware of your body, especially the movements in the lower part. As you do this, because you are focusing on a very simple object, and because you have no worries or problems with physical pain, you find it's relatively easy to focus on these many sensations. And after a short while, you can see so many things happening in one step that you're surprised just how many different muscles have to move just for one left step. And because you're interested and you're focused, it means your mind is pretty still. And because it's still, because you're not doing very much, your mindfulness increases. You are empowering and strengthening your mindfulness, as I said in the talk yesterday, whenever it was. The trouble when you don't worry about the past, you don't know what you did this morning, you don't know what you're going to talk about tomorrow. But when you strengthen that mindfulness and give it power, this is how it happens. You're still, you're not doing very much, and your mindfulness increases naturally. And as your mindfulness increases, you can see more of those feelings. And as your mindfulness gets stronger and stronger, it just happens. It seems to be the usual process that you tend to walk slower and slower. Not because you're trying to walk slowly, but there's so many things happening in just one step that there's too much to go fast. That you walk very slowly to see all these amazing things which are happening. And as you go slower, the mindfulness gets stronger. And, as I said, with the strengthening of mindfulness, you get piti sukha occurring. It becomes delightful and happy. Many years ago, I was invited by a Catholic friend who had a retreat. And she was trying to teach people basic meditation just to relieve the stress of modern life. But because she was a manager and running this small guest house north of Perth, in a very beautiful location, it was very hard for her to sit and meditate and stay on the breath. She was a very restless woman. But when I taught her walking meditation, she got it straight away. And there she was, just walking, fascinated by all the different movements in the feet. And she got so joyful. Whenever I see her, she always reminds me and says thank you. That was her type of meditation. And she loves it and she does it regularly. Simply because she enjoys it. You get piti sukha coming up with just walking. And to give you the example which I've often taught people, I learned that meditation as a lay person. And when I first became a bhikkhu, I ordained in a monastery in Bangkok before moving out into the forests. And because I had much time and I was doing much meditation, the only convenient place for me to do walking meditation was next on the veranda of the main hall, the hall where the ordinations were performed and all the other ceremonies such as Patimokkha recitation happened. And that veranda was maybe 18 or 20 meters long. And inside the hall was a grandfather clock which chimed every quarter hour. And because of its chimes, every day I would do walking meditation for 1 hour. And it would just take half an hour to get from one end to the other, and another half an hour to get back again. That was just how my walking meditation developed. It was just so slow. And I do recall on one morning, I hadn't completed my walking meditation yet, and I was focused on the floor 2 meters in front of me. My mind was totally immersed in the movement of my right leg as it was lifting up and going forward. And I was so delighted in what was happening. I was so still, peaceful and content. It was very strange when I heard a sound. Brahma Wang So, Brahma Wang So. As if it was coming from 100 miles away. And I could only just hear it. What was happening was I was late for Adana. I'd forgotten that morning that I was invited to go to a layperson's house to receive the meal for the day. And I'd forgotten all about it. And a monk was sent to get me. And he was shouting in my ear, maybe only an inch from my ear, Brahma Wang So! But to me, because you were in some samadhi, it was like 1,000 miles away. Brahma Wang So. Now that is an accurate description of what happened. And I realized that it was a monk calling me. But when you get into any state of stillness, it's so hard to come out. I knew out of respect for others, especially this monk being senior to me, I had to come out of my samadhi, my stillness. But it took such a long time. Because as I started moving my head, I noticed all the amazing feelings in my head as it moved from where it was to the right. Every sensation in your head moving, you picked up, and it was so fascinating. It took me 2 or 3 minutes to turn my head around to face this monk. And say, what? Fortunately, because he was a monk, he knew about meditation, could understand how I was feeling. And I was trying to come out of that stillness as fast as I could, but you just cannot rush these things. You're still having a wonderful, peaceful time. And it's hard to accelerate up to the normal way of doing things. And I always remember that experience, because I was disturbed during the walking meditation, but it showed me how deep I had got in stillness. And that's what happens to you. You're just walking and every movement of the foot or the leg is so interesting and so delightful. You spend a long time just walking. Spend a long time perfectly content and happy. No thought in the mind, because you have inner contentment. When people say that they still have a wandering mind and many thoughts going on in the mind, please remember, in Buddhism, we don't fight our defilements. We understand them. And when we know them, then they disappear. Just like the story of Mara. How did the monks and the bhikkhunis, how did they defeat Mara? Not by punching Mara, not by kicking Mara, not through force, but through wisdom. I know you, Mara. As soon as they understood the problem, then Mara in the suttas, his shoulders would slump, his head would droop, the monk knows me, and would walk away. Defeated. Mara was defeated through wisdom, not through force, nor through will, nor through anger. And this is the same in any restlessness, any thinking which is still happening inside of you. Don't use force. Don't kick butt. That's what Americans in the army do. They kick butt. You're a monk. You're not a marine soldier. Instead, you just get to know what is the wandering mind and why does it wander? From what cause? From what reason? And you'll always find it is lack of contentment, lack of happiness in this moment causes the mind to wander somewhere else in search of happiness. If the cow doesn't find grass right here, it will wander off somewhere else to find grass. If your mind doesn't find nutriments of happiness, contentment right now, it will always go somewhere else looking for it, and you will not be able to stop it. It's the nature of your mind. The only way you can prevent the mind from wandering off is to realize in this very moment you have all the happiness you ever need. When you stop wanting something more, only then can you enjoy what you already have. And when you enjoy what you already have, then you're peaceful, then you're content. So walking meditation, you soon get to enjoy just being here with this movement of the feet, this one sensation which is delightful and peaceful, and you get so content, the mind doesn't think. It doesn't wander anywhere, which means you are getting into a state of freedom, a state of stillness. And you just keep on walking and walking however long you want. Soon, hopefully, as you develop that delightful feeling of doing walking meditation, hopefully you'll have this other insight experience, which is not uncommon. As you're walking, you suddenly realize that you're not doing the walking at all. That the feet are lifting, they're moving, they're going down, the weight is changing, and you are not controlling the walking. That it's happening automatically. Even people in the army who are marching experience this. They walk, 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 and after 2 or 3 hours of walking on march in the army, they realize they don't need to tell their legs to walk anymore. It does it automatically. And in walking meditation, your legs are moving and you are very mindful and aware enough to realize that you're not telling them to walk. That you are just watching as if it's somebody else's body and the body is walking itself and you are not telling it to walk. It becomes an automatic process, not coming from you. And that particular experience is very helpful to get the insight that you are not in control of your body, and you always think you are. You always think that you do the walking, that you do the moving of your body, that you do this, that you choose to do this, you choose to do that. And later on in my talks on insight, I will teach you that that is the illusion of the will. The illusion that you are in charge of your will, that it originates from you. Later on, I will show you and give you heaps of evidence, and the best evidence of all is your achievement of jhana, especially second jhana, where it will shock you, you realize that you are not in charge. You should all know that from the suttas. Anatta, there's nothing inside, there's not a person inside. So who chose to come to this retreat? Who chose to get up in the morning or sleep in? Who chose to sit in that particular position, not another position? It wasn't you. It's an automatic process. And in walking meditation, you start to get some insight into this. Because there you are, the body's walking, and I'm not walking. I'm not doing this, I'm not telling the body to do this. It's doing it all by itself. And a process which you usually think is under your control, walking, is now seen to be an automatic process. Not me, not mine, not a self. And that's wonderful. Because you're very peaceful, And because your mindfulness is strong, you're not at all afraid of that. In fact, it's even more delightful to realize that you don't have to tell the body what to do. You can let the body do the walking, and you can just take it easy and rest. So that's what happens with the walking meditation. When you learn how to do walking meditation, it's very, very helpful because, you know, your legs do get sore, your back gets sore. And if you don't exercise the body, it does become sick. And the Buddha emphasized walking meditation as a great way of overcoming the digestive problems which many monks have. I don't know, it seems to be an occupational hazard that monks have bad digestions. And there's two reasons for that. One is you don't have enough exercise, and walking meditation is great to give you that exercise. The other reason, and this is a bit of science, is when you're doing eating, like I said a couple of days ago, one morsel of food at a time. Because if you're not mindful of what you're eating, the saliva doesn't come out of your mouth, and the other juices in the digestive system don't get secreted. When you're mindful, and I'll give you an exercise now, it's a dangerous exercise to teach monks this time of the day, but think of your favorite food. Think of the food which you like the most, especially your Western monks, the sort of food you like back home in the country of your origin. Can you think of it now? Can you see it? Now can you notice the saliva coming out? You see, when you're mindful of food, saliva comes out, the bile and other stuff comes out from your digestive system, and it gets digested. If you're rushing food and the morsel which you're eating now, you're paying no attention to it, you're paying attention to what's going to happen next. Or even worse, like you lay people, you're eating and on the mobile phone at the same time. And you're paying no attention to the food, which means you're not enjoying it, which means that the saliva is not coming out as much as it should. Or even worse, when you're having dinner with people, you're talking with somebody. You're giving no attention at all from what you're putting in your mouth, because you're talking to somebody else. So if you want to have good digestion, be mindful of the food. Notice it as it's being chewed and tasted. And enjoy it. Because when you enjoy the food and you taste it fully with mindfulness, it gets well digested. You don't have so many physical problems with digestion, especially later on in your monastic life. Simple mindfulness, simple delight. Not overly delight, because that gives rise to too much craving, but to understand that the food has to be delightful to be digested. You have to have delight in the walking for you to get some degree of samadhi. Because it's the delight in the feelings in the feet or the legs which sticks the mind to the object. So you're not forcing it anymore. This is the great result of walking meditation. It becomes so delightful that it becomes effortless. Because it's effortless, you can really relax and be free of this terrible thing of always having to put effort into the things you're doing in life. Effortless walking. Still, peaceful, delighted in the movement of the feet. And seeing a little bit of anatta when it becomes natural. And then, after you finish walking for a while, then you can go and sit down. As many of you have been doing, I've noticed that when you interchange between walking and sitting, your walking meditation may be mostly on a path, but it finishes when you just get to your sitting cushion. You don't finish on your path and then walk mindlessly to where you're going to do some sitting meditation. You continue all the way up the stairs in this room to your seat, and then you sit down. So it becomes a continuous exercise with hardly only a moment's gap between the walking and the sitting and the walking and the sitting. That way you can continue your practice for many hours of the day continuously without breaking and disturbing the process of samadhi. And when you finish your sitting meditation, from the time you stand up, that's where your walking meditation begins. And if you practice like that, you'll find the mind does get more and more still. The walking meditation does support the sitting meditation. Your mind has been stilled in the present moment, silent, delighting in very simple things. And when you sit down, you have present moment awareness, you have stillness, you have piti sukha. It's very easy to go onto the breath and get into nimittas and even jhanas. Your walking meditation has eased all the aches in the body and has also created a sense of present moment awareness, silence and piti sukha. You have a great time doing your sitting meditation. They support each other. So that is the walking meditation. Later on, again, a couple of days' time, I'll show how both these meditations can be used for insight. But until the mind is still and peaceful, it's a waste of time talking about insight, especially the insights which lead to the deep achievements of Magampala. To get samadhi first, to get stillness first of all, and then insights come quite naturally. The biggest problem for monks and nuns, lay people these days, is not having enough stillness. Many people have insights, but they're really just thoughts and concepts, and they argue with them afterwards because they're not based on samadhi, they're not based on stillness. So get stillness first of all. The insights will happen afterwards. So that's the talk this evening on the walking meditation.